talking about Solomon. So there's, we'll see how I do going through the rest of it. This is Solomon is a very convicting character to me. We're not going to get into that as much today, but we're just going through a little bit of an introduction. And anybody know Solomon? What are words that pop up when you talk about Solomon? Wisdom. That's the first thing that pops up. And so we're going to dive into that. This is going to set up nicely for the next four lessons. Solomon covers a lot of chapters in the Bible that I only have a few lessons for him. So we're going to try our best to make everything mesh together well. I will say this first part, Solomon's also known for building the temple. This first part, you see the good aspects of Solomon, and then things start to change a little bit. And the Bible does it subtly, in a very meticulous way, and I think that's incredibly purposeful. But you see Solomon fall to the same things that you saw David, Saul. I mean, you see the fall of Solomon. But this is going to be a good lesson today. And what I want us to keep in mind is that Christ is greater than any of these people that we're talking about. Christ is far superior than Solomon, and each one has their own attribute that we look at and we're like, oh, that's a good king, or that's this, that's that. I mean, you had David in his heart for his people, his heart after God. Saul was head and shoulders taller than everybody else. So God kind of lines up these kings, showing the big brute of a man is going to lead the people, and he falls short. And then David comes in, and he's got this over and above love pours out of it. I mean, he's a more emotional side of things, does everything, acts largely out of emotion, but says he's a man after God's own heart. And he chases them and pursues it. And we see that and we go, oh man, David's got it figured out. And then you see the fall of David, and it's, hey, Christ is this much superior to even David. And then you have this next king ushered in, and he's more wise than anybody before him and more wise than anybody after him. So you have this very well set up play of the first kings of Israel, where God is showing all these attributes that are desirable by anybody that you would want to be a leader, right? He sets up these attributes and he talks about it and he shows them. And typically in the very beginning, in a light that is very attractive. I mean, Saul goes and he wins battles. Saul does this, Saul does that. David. David and Goliath. David goes and is a pain to the Philistines. David does all these things right, and then Solomon, what we're going to get into, they set up these attributes as desired attributes. But every attribute that is God-given, because we're going to see, especially in Solomon, this God-given attribute that everybody desires, that in Solomon's case, people come from far and wide to see his wisdom, just to sit in his courts and to listen to him speak. You have this, which seems like the pinnacle, and he builds this empire, which not in the way that should be, but we'll get into that later. But you have this perfect setup of all these attributes, these kingly, these leader attributes, and yet all of them fall short of Christ. And so I think that's important as we read through Solomon, because where we're going to have to stop today, you're going to have Solomon way up here in your head, right? The wisdom, we're going to get to the story of, we're not going to quite get to the story of the mom and the baby, but well-known stories, right? A well-known king. After Solomon, things kind of get, I would be surprised if any of you can list three kings after Solomon. Maybe you can't, but they get pretty twisted, mixed, divided kingdoms, and a bunch of junk starts going on. We're going to start in 1 Kings 1, and we're going to skip to verse 28. Then King David answered, "Call Bathsheba to me." So she came into the king's presence and stood before the king. And the king swore, saying, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my soul out of every adversity? As I swore to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, saying, Solomon your son shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne in my place, even so will I do this day." Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the ground and paid homage to the king and said, "May my king, Lord King David, live forever." King David said, "Call me Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada. So they came before the king, and the king said to them, "Take with you the servants of your lord, and have Solomon my son ride on my own mule, and bring him down to Gihon. And let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet there anoint him king over Israel. Then blow the trumpet and say, 'Long live King Solomon.' You shall then come up after him, and he shall come and sit on my throne, for he shall be king in my place. And I have appointed him to be ruler over Israel and over Judah. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, answered the king, 'Amen. May the Lord, the God of my lord king, say so. As the Lord has been with my lord the king, even so may he be with Solomon, and make his throne greater than the throne of my lord King David.'" I hope this is ringing some bells, and I'm not going to get into it, but I hope the mule and the parade is starting to ring some Jesus bells here. So Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and the Cherethites, the Pelethites, went down and had Solomon ride on King David's mule and brought him to Gihon. There Zadok the priest took the horn of oil from the tent and anointed Solomon. Then they blew the trumpet, and all the people said, "Long live King Solomon." And all the people went up after him, playing pipes and rejoicing with great joy, so that the earth was split by their noise. We're going to skip over the next part. At the same time, we have another classic power play, because when one of David's other sons is also trying to become king at the same time, we're going to skip over that part. It's intriguing how often and how repetitive that is. It's indicative of the human nature. I mean, when there's an opening and there's a spot, what do we like to do? Like to take it, because who doesn't think it sounds good to be king of a people, of a wealthy nation? Right? And oftentimes on the outside looking in, when we see some of these people who do well or do whatever the case may be, that you kind of, we talk about the phrase, the good life, or blessed. When we talk about that, and when people see something else and they're like, "Oh man, they got the good life." We probably know people like that, right? That you see and you're like, "Man, they don't have to work anymore. They don't have to do this. They don't have to do that." We attribute the good life to that. It's human nature to want. Not oftentimes do we, it's the phrase, "the grass is greener on the other side." How often is the grass greener? not as often as you'd think, right? Sometimes we get into those positions and then we realize just how good we had it before we started doing this stuff. But to anybody, because you see, this is going to be an odd comparison, but have you ever looked at presidents before and after their president? Who wants that? Right? Nobody. They look like they're 50 years older after a four-year term. And what I think is when people look on the outside in and they aren't honest with themselves, the president looks like a pretty good job, doesn't it? Like, oh, he's just living in the White House, right? Everybody knows him. He's leader of one of the most powerful nations, right? And I think that's what you get. I thought Dad's job was easy until I took it, right? When on the outside looking in, you're like, oh, that's a piece of cake. And then you start doing it, and you're like, okay, this is not as fun as I was expecting it to be. So you have an element of that, and I just very briefed through that. So we're going to go to 1 Kings chapter 2. When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, I'm about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do, and wherever you turn, that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. So David goes into a promise set by God. That promise is, as long as your kids, your sons, take care, then you'll have an offspring on the throne forever. He's relaying this to Solomon. He gives him a stern warning that he needs to be a follower of Christ, not turning away and following the law of Moses. And with all your heart and with all your soul, you shall not lack a man. And to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Moreover, you also know that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, how he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner the son of Ner, and Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed avenging in the time of peace for blood that had been shed in war, and putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals of his feet. Act therefore according to your wisdom, but do not let his gray head go down to Sheol in peace. But deal loyally with the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table. For with such loyalty they met me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. And there is also with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite, from Beeruim, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I came to Mahanaim. But when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with a sword. Now therefore do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man. You will know what you ought to do to him, and you shall bring his gray head down with blood to Sheol. So David's giving his passing speech, and he says, hey, these are going to be people loyal to you. These are going to be people against him. And already David's speaking this wisdom language. This is pre-instillment of and you can kind of see that this is something that's in Solomon early. Because what we're about to get to is Solomon asking God for wisdom, when he said, I'll grant you anything. kind of the genie in the bottle gig, right? I'll grant you anything, and we'll get to that here in a second, but for a young man, it comes off awfully odd for him to ask for just wisdom, right? Smart, but you can kind of see this playing out. David's already saying, you're a wise man. So you already see glimpses of this. Then David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And the time that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned 7 in Hebron and 33 years in Jerusalem. So Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was firmly established. Then Adonijah, the son of Higgith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, and she said, "Do you come peacefully?" He said, "Peacefully." Then he said, "I have something to say to you." She said, "Speak." He said, "You know that the kingdom was mine and that all Israel fully expected me to reign. However, the kingdom has turned about and become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord, and now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me." She said to him, "Speak." And he said, "Please ask King Solomon. He will not refuse you to give me Abishag, the Shunammite, as my wife." Bathsheba said, "Very well, I will speak for you to the king." So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah, and the king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. Then he sat on the throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother. And she sat on his right. Then she said, "I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me." And the king said to her, "Make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse you." She said, "Let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as his wife." King Solomon answered his mother, "Why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? As for the kingdom also, for he is my older brother. And on his side are Abathar the priest and Joab the son of Zeruiah." Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, "God do so to me and more also, if this word does not cost Adonijah his life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David my father, who has made me a house, as he promised, as Adonijah shall be put to death today." So King Solomon sent Benai, the son of Jehoiada, and struck him down, and he died. And to Abathar the priest king said, "Go to Anathoth, to your estate, for you deserve death, but I will not at this time put you to death, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because you shared in all my father's affliction." So Solomon expelled Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, thus fulfilling the word of the Lord that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli and Shiloh. When news came to Joab, for Joab he had supported Adonijah, although he had not supported Absalom, Joab fled to the tent of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. And when it was told to King Solomon, Joab had fled to the tent of the Lord, and behold, he is beside the altar. Solomon sent Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, saying, "Go strike him down." So Benaiah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, "The king commands, come out." But he said, "No, I will die here." Then Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, "Thus said Joab, and thus he answered me." The king replied to him, "Do as he said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and from my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The Lord will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with the sword two men more righteous and better than himself, Abner the son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa, the son of Jether, commander of the army of Judah. So shall their blood come back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. But for David and for his descendants and for his house and for his throne, there shall be peace from the Lord forevermore." Then Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and struck him down and put him to death. and he was buried in his house in the wilderness. The king put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, over the army in the place of Joab, and the king put Zadok the priest in place of Abiathar. Then the king sent and summoned Shemaiah and said to him, build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there to any place whatever, for on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you shall die, and your blood shall be on your own head. And Shimeah said to the king, what you say is good, as my lord the king said, so will your servants do. And Shimeah lived in Jerusalem many days. But it happened that later 3 years that two of Shimeah's servants ran away to Achish, son of Maacah, king of Gath. And when it was told to Shimeah, behold, your servants are in Gath, Shimeah rose and saddled the donkey and went to Gath to Achish to seek his servants. Shimeah went and brought his servants from Gath. And when Solomon was told Shimeah had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and returned, the king sent and summoned Shimeah and said to him, did I not make you swear by the Lord solemnly? And solemnly warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day you go out and go to any place, whatever, you shall die. And you said to me, whatever you say is good, I will obey. Why then have you not kept your oath to the Lord with the commandment in which I commanded you? The king also said to Shimeon, you know that in your heart all the harm that you did to my father, so the Lord will bring back harm on your own head, but King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. Then the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down, and he died. So the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. So he cleans house, right? He takes king, he follows through with his father's wishes, and after that's done, you're going to have this new set. If we think back to, it's already 35. If you think back to when this whole thing started, what David's desire was to also build a house for God, was it not? What did God tell him? Your hand's too bloody to build the house of God, but your son after you is going to build me a house. And so this whole thing, David at the end of his days kind of goes on this path to set his son up well. And then he goes through with everything, he sets his son up well, and then he gives his last answers. And now we get to the point where Solomon kind of gets to do his own thing, right? And so we have this prayer for wisdom. We're going to read that, and then we're probably going to be close to out of time. But we're going to go through this prayer, and then we're going to see how this... I want you all, hopefully, read over this chapter, 1 Kings 3, a couple times, because we're about to... We have, one good story after this, and that's where you start to see the subtle changes in Solomon. And what I hope y'all tune into a little bit is this: wisdom biblically is what? It's knowing good from bad. That's wisdom. How the Bible is going to describe wisdom is knowing good from bad. How Satan tempts people in the garden is, hey, you're not going to die. You're just going to have something unveiled to you that only God knows. You're going to become more like God. And so this wisdom has been something pitched from day one. It's knowing good from bad. You have these wisdom literature, you have Proverbs, you have all these things. And what are they tuning you into? This is how to do something. This is not how to do something. This is how to do something. So wisdom is being able to make the right call in maybe uncertain circumstances. Wisdom is knowing the right way, the wrong way, and being able to choose. What Solomon asks for is knowledge, and he gains the knowledge. So every one of Solomon's actions after this need to be framed from the point of, hey, Solomon understands better than anybody before him and anybody after him, except for God. The right and the wrong. Does that not increase the stakes of what you do? So this prayer that we're about to read comes with some severe weight. This dream and what Solomon asked for comes with, man, there's no loopholes, right? We like loopholes. Solomon just cut all the loopholes. And at this point in time, I think we can all agree that Solomon is very tuned in with God and God's desires. And I think we can all attest to that from what we've read so far. So he makes this prayer. Has anybody ever prayed a prayer and it comes true and you go, oh boy, can I take that back? Because I think Solomon's going to get to the place where he probably just would have soon taken it back. Because anytime you have all this surmounting pressure of, hey, I know, like, and we'll get to it next week and maybe the following week, but when you go through the Proverbs and you go through some of these depictions, even later, like in Matthew, and it talks about Solomon, it says he even knows the birds of the field. He even knows the creatures. Like, he is in tune with what is going on. And I imagine the burden of that for a mere human being is probably not as fun as he would have thought it was going to be. When there's no loopholes available and you can't try to wiggle yourself out, and you have a deeper understanding about what's around you than anybody else, it was probably fun for a couple of years. But then you witness atrocities of people, and you understand certain things, and you witness all this stuff that you have to internalize. It's probably a hard place to sit. Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. And the people were sacrificing at the high places. However, because no house had yet been built for the name of the Lord, Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. Only he sacrificed and made offerings at the high places, and the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on the altar of Gibeon. The Lord appeared to Solomon. 1,000 burnt offerings. Seems like he's very thorough. 1,000 burnt offerings at the altar. And at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, ask what I shall give you. And Solomon said, you have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness and righteousness and in uprightness of hearts towards you. And you have kept him from this great You have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in the place of David my father, although I am but a little child. Kind of contradicts, right? Kind of contradicts what David his father said before he passed. He said, Solomon, you're a wise man, do this. You're a wise man, do this. You're a wise man, do this. And Solomon has this understanding when he sits down in front of God that he is but a little child in comparison. I do not know how to go out or come in. There's a hyperlink, but I've already been once, so we're going to skip it. I might get to it next week. But this is a common phrase. I do not know how to go out or how to come in. And your servant is in the midst of a people whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. He's going back on God's promise. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this, your great people? It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this, and God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself a long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before, and none like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways, keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked them, I will lengthen your days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Then he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and offered up burnt offerings and peace offerings, and made a feast for all of his servants. We get to the story about Solomon's wisdom, but I want us to really keep in mind this whole interaction with God. God says, I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways, keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. We have this incredible exchange, and God's pleased with his answers. He asked for a wise and discerning mind to know the good, the difference between good and evil, so that he can enact it. What I want you to hear is the last part. For who can govern over your people? They realize there's only one that can govern over his people. And who is it? God. So what's he asking? Be in the same mind space as God. To God to give a glimpse in my head of what's going on in yours, so that I can govern your people. He's asking for the mind, the discernment of God. God is pleased. Now, we get to over the next several, after this, Solomon asks for wisdom. If you go to your next book, it's Solomon Builds God's Temple. And we start to see things go awry. Sounds strange, but if you read it, try to pick up on where things go awry earlier than we think, because it happens earlier than we think. But you have somebody who's just asked for this kind of scary, if we're going to, let's just call it a superpower. Kind of a scary ask. I want to know good and evil. I want a wise and discerning mind as you have, God, because who else can govern your people? It's a good prayer. Then he gets it. And I think it probably scares him a little. And we see something play out that, again, if you put yourself in their shoes, or his, Solomon's shoes, it kind of makes sense. I mean, this is a steep, heavy burden to bear. And I think, and what you see happen, and I'm going to spoil it, but what you see happen is, what is human nature? Is to have something good in front of you and to say, hey, I'm going to take a little bit of this away from God and I'm going to take it into my own hands. I have this wisdom and this discernment, and now I kind of want to, like, maybe tweak some things to benefit me. God granted this, and I kind of want to make it a little bit about me, but I'm still going to try to do mostly what God says. And we have this play out. But Solomon is a, we're going to get into some convicting stuff in a week about how Solomon builds God's house and how he built his own house. And it's a very interesting character. But at first, we sound good, right? But I don't want us to lose the gravity of Solomon's ask as we go forward, because I won't be able to talk about this much longer, because I have a lot to get through. Is the gravity of Solomon's ask is something that Satan tempted man from the very beginning. I also want you to see that it did please God in the moment, because I think Solomon's heart was in a very good place, but Brooks, like Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, and I think Solomon probably got more than he bargained because it started out pretty good. Y'all read, because we won't get through it next week. Y'all read the story, the well-known story of him saying he's going to split a baby in half and giving it to the right mother, because that story goes out in all the lands. And you have the Queen of Sheba come in and just want to talk to Solomon. And I think that was more of a test than we probably realized. Maybe a godly test, and he passes with flying colors. And so he starts off in a really good path, but that these stories just emanate throughout all the land. And then what happens is everybody around him wants a part. And I think that's what's meant to happen. I think when you're acting as a true reflection of Christ, everybody around you probably wants a part, because you're good to be around. You're going to be loyal. You're going to have all these attributes that people desire to want to be around. But what happens is that gets twisted, because Solomon doesn't have a firm foundation of standing. What I mean by that is people just start offering him things. Their daughters, offering him gold, offering him riches. And then what happens is he turns that into the Solomon thing. And that was not intended from the very beginning. So y'all read into it a little bit. Next week's going to be a fun week. Hopefully. Convicting week, but a good week. Thank y'all for being here.